This is Embodied on the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. A close friendship is a life-altering gift. From celebrating a promotion at work to healing the sting of rejection after a breakup, the people we choose to surround ourselves with see us through the good, the bad, and the ugly of our lives. If we're lucky, some of those friends will stick around for life. We're used to friendship being described as effortless, but in reality, these big friendships take a lot of work. So how exactly do we go about sustaining these friendships for the long haul? Joining me now are Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman. They're co-authors of the new book, Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close, and also co-host of the podcast, Call Your Girlfriend. They're also best friends in real life. Aminatou and Anne, welcome to the show.
Hi,
thank you so much for having us.
Aminatou, I'd love to start with you with the term that is the premise for this whole book, this term of big friendship that you say is a very distinct category from the other kinds of friends we have in our lives. What is a big friendship?
Yeah, as you point out, you know, the word friend just encompasses so many different kinds of relationships. You are talking about people that you literally only know on Facebook or people that you want to be with you on your last days on Earth. And so it's quite a range. But in coining big friendship, you know, we were really trying to get at this tier of friendship that really transcends life phases, that transcends geographical locations, that transcends emotional shifts. We are talking about the kind of friendship that you want to be rooted in the future and someone that you are hoping to build a life with over the long term.
And one of the things I found so just healing about your book was honestly just that premise that there you really put on a pedestal this particular kind of friendship that gets so little structural recognition or academic recognition or recognition really anywhere. It really puts this kind of friendship up in the same category as a close family bond or a romantic relationship. And talk about that. I mean, why is there so little kind of recognition of this kind of friendship?
This is a little bit a chicken or egg problem in some ways, right? Like we don't have a definition in a way of really talking about how these kinds of friendships are different. And then we also culturally don't have a lot of things that reflect the fact that friends play these roles for us. You know, it's not really common to name your friend as, say, your medical proxy, or to maybe buy property with a friend if you want to invest in a house together. Like, those things are still not normalized. You know, we're not seeing commercials of friends doing these big life stage things together. And so I think that even when people are having this very intimate emotional experience in friendship and knowing that this is someone who is so core to them, they still don't see that reflected. You know, all we see is more traditional family structures and things like marriage and romantic partnership. And so what we're really trying to do is get people to look at the friendships they really do have that are long lasting and ask the question, why? Why aren't we seeing those reflected?
How have the two of you, Amina, kind of rewritten social and structural rules to elevate your friendship to this status? What are some examples of how you've done that throughout the course of your decade-long friendship?
So many different ways. You know, we have taken each other to weddings as dates. We refuse to have, the premise that the only kind of social escort you can have is a romantic partner. We have listed each other on our, you know, HR paperwork at work. We run a business together where we are pretty egalitarian partners. It's important for us, for people to know that we are a partnership.
There's a term called chosen family, which you all use in the book, but you pay tribute to its long history in the LGBTQ community. And I want to play a clip from a listener, Corey Myrick, who talks about friendships filling a gap that his family couldn't in his own life. Let's listen.
Like, the way that I grew up, there was a really big emphasis on like romantic relationships, but not as much like platonic or like friendships. Like, there's a culture around like male relationships that just like deems them not as like important or helpful. And so I think it's been nice to kind of like break free from that and like really recognize the importance of like men having friendships with other men. I feel like a lot of times friendships can help with like things that you can't necessarily get through your family, support with thinking through like identity and like sexuality. was really helpful.
So that's Asheville listener Corey Myrick, and I'm talking with Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman about their friendship and their new book, Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. So Anne, what do you hear in that clip from Corey, and how does it resonate with the way that you all talk about chosen family in your own book?
Oh, I love Corey's observation that friendship can kind of allow you to explore parts of your identity or maybe have a perspective on your identity that family relationships don't always provide. And that's something that we really write about in the book, the ways that learning about the world through each other and sort of charting goals together and separately about where we wanted to go really shaped who we are as people. And, you know, that is a really fundamentally different relationship than the relationship a lot of us have with our families. I also want to speak to a comment of Corey's about the ways these kind of intimate platonic relationships are modeled, or rather not modeled, for men. I think while it's true, we've heard from many men on this, as we talk about the book, while they are talking about their deep, important, big friendships, it's also true that I think it's a lot more assumed that women will forge these intimate bonds with their friends, and that men might have some more cultural stereotypes to overcome in order to forge these relationships. And that that just breaks my heart. And that's something that I really hope changes as more people like Corey are talking about their experiences and how affirmed they've been by friendship.
And I mean, it kind of pays tribute to the fact that there are so few narratives out there of these long-lasting lifetime friendships that don't just focus on the glory and the positive moments and the sunshine. And in your book, you really weave the history of your friendship through these ups and downs and kind of take a critical look at what it is meant to kind of go up and down through those storms together. And I want to play a clip from a listener who her daughter, she and her daughter moved in with her best friend of 23 years to help after her friend's young son had open heart surgery, and they helped with childcare during this whole quarantine. So I'm going to listen to that story and then have you all reflect a little bit more. Here is Callie Anderson of Hillsborough.
So our quarantine story is that we're living together after 23 years of friendship. It's a lot when you put two type A personalities under one roof and with three kids cumulatively and a dog and a partridge in a pear tree, it feels like. But here we are. The friendship is a part of it that is pivotal, because if we didn't have the respect for one another that existed prior to living with one another on a temporary basis, it would be a lot more stressful. But without the history of the friendship and the respect for differences, it would be 10 times harder.
So that's Callie Anderson talking about how she's helping out her best friend during the pandemic. And Amina, I would love to hear your reflections on that clip and kind of this idea that, you know, you have to have this foundation, this structural foundation for friendship, of these moments where you have found the light in each other, you found the sameness, you found the resonance, and that can kind of help you in the moments where the dissonance starts to develop. What do you hear in that clip?
Oh, this clip is making me so emotional, because I have also been living with friends who have children in the pandemic. And, you know, it's so beautiful to me that, you know, this listener can have this expression of love and friendship that is so concrete, especially right now. You know, in the book, we write that friendship is a kind of life insurance against the hurricanes that life throws at you. And, you know, I love this idea that we can start to think of our friends as our community and as support, you know, and that that's kind of the whole point of being together. I also really loved, you know, that assertion that having a basis of respect and a basis of understanding each other's differences is so important, because obviously the pandemic it's such a stressful time. It is such a stressful time for everyone. But knowing that you can trust your friend and that you can love your friend to step into a role that traditionally we would ascribe to, you know, to your biological family, I think is something that makes me really, really, really hopeful. And I think that this is not an anomaly. A lot of people are doing this in the pandemic, and a lot of people have done this, you know, in times where we were not in a pandemic.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation after a quick break. I'm talking with Amina Tuso and Anne Friedman, co-authors of the new book, Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. They're also co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend. They'll stay with me just ahead. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is Embodied on The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Close friendships can be some of the most rewarding relationships of our lives. But maintaining long-term friendships takes work. We don't always have tools handy to do that. The pandemic isn't making things any easier.
The toughest part of all of this is seeing friends go through really hard experiences, like loss of a pet or losing their family members. We're not able to show up in the ways that we used to.
Today, I'm talking with two real-life best friends who are sharing their wisdom on the emotional labor behind great friendships. Amina Tuso and Anne Friedman are co-hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend and co-authors of the new book, Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close. So, Anne, we just heard from Katie about some of the hard moments that she's witnessing her friends go through in this pandemic. And you and Amina Tuso look in the book at some of the hard moments that you each have gone through in your lives and ways that you have been able to show up for one another and ways in which you have struggled to. And I want to go into that struggle a little bit. And I'd love to hear your choice to reflect on some of the shadow sides of these big friendships.
Oh, that message, that really, really hit me. I really relate to that caller in how difficult it is to show up when you cannot physically show up for someone you care about. In the book, we write about not just how hard it has been sometimes for us to show up for each other, but about some periods in our friendship when we were actively just missing each other communication-wise. We were, saying things that were hurting the other's feelings, or maybe not picking up on the fact that one of us was trying to signal that she was unhappy or needed something more from the friendship. And we write about how these incidents kind of started small, things that we both maybe brushed off fairly easily, but then led to bigger and bigger miscommunications and this more of a loss of goodwill between us. And the number of things that we felt comfortable talking about with each other just shrank and shrank over time until we found ourselves in this place where we were still nominally calling each other very close friends, but we felt really challenged to be vulnerable and actually talk about the substance of our lives with each other. And we wanted to include that experience in the book because it felt true to some things that have happened to us in other friendships. And you know, since the book has been out, we've heard from people that it feels true to things that have happened in their friendships, which is to say, it's not always perfect communication and smooth sailing. And if you're in a friendship for the long term, the odds are you are both going to go through things that are really challenging, that are also going to change the way your friendship functions. And if you cannot talk about the changes that are happening to you individually and how those changes affect the friendship, they're going to pose a threat to it. And so we really wanted to include that as a way of saying this is part of the experience of friendship, too.
And you talk about this as an idea of a stretch, a metaphor that I really love, which is that there are these moments constantly when we are stretching for our friends. Sometimes it may feel like little things like, oh, they're just not as good of a texter. You know, I have to wait a day to hear back from them. Sometimes it gets stretchier and stretchier and you have these big missed communications. And I wonder, Amina, I mean, this is a hard question to answer, but what are some of the things that you can kind of consider when you decide if a friendship is worth continuing to stretch for? And how did you all negotiate that in your own friendship?
Oh, man, that is a really, it's such a big question, you know, and I think that we are still figuring that out about ourselves, because it's something that is top of mind now, but was not always for us in our friendship. I think that the questions that I always try to ask myself are, why am I feeling the way that I'm feeling? And am I telling my friends that I'm feeling this way? And if not, why? I think that really starting from a place of being introspective about your own behavior and understanding why you might be frustrated and how you might want to communicate about that, I think it's really important to listen to that voice, because I think that a lot of times it's a realization that actually you are noticing a pattern and not a one-off incident. And I think that recognizing that is really important and powerful.
I think it's also so easy to, especially with friendships, when there isn't that kind of assumed, well, they're still going to be there for me no matter what, because, you know, I'm related to them by blood, or, you know, I have to come home to them in my house every day. There's an extra level of fragility because there's not an assumed that your friend is always going to be there for you. So, mm-hmm. Anne, how does that kind of change the way that you approach having these hard conversations?
You're absolutely right that that's something that makes it harder to approach hard conversations in friendship. You know, one of the experts we interviewed for this book, when she talked about characteristics that healthy long-term friendships share, one of them was openness, not surprisingly. You know, the friends are sharing of themselves. But another one was assurances, that the friends are saying to each other, you know what, I know we're not related by blood, or I know we don't have a marriage license, but I really want to be here and be a part of your life for the long term. And if something is bothering you in our friendship, I want to hear about it. And I think that that could be so incredible. You know, if we had maybe said those things to each other in a more explicit way, maybe we would have addressed some of these things faster. I think, you know, friendship allows you to make a lot of assumptions. And in some ways, that's its power. It's very flexible. It can change through different stages of your life. But it also really benefits from some of the assurances of safety and assurances that you want to be around for a long time, that other types of relationships more enjoy by default.
I want to play a clip from another listener. This is Jenna Pimentel of Fayetteville talking about her best friend, Nikki, and how they adjusted their friendship after Nikki moved across the country and found little ways to kind of reassure one another that they were still there, even if they weren't there in person. Let's listen.
We just started writing letters, and then we just found out ways to make it special. What we would start doing is just like adding different things in there, like things that were small enough to put in an envelope, but not big enough that you needed a package. I think Nikki mailed me a hotel key once to the hotel that she works at and told me it was for when I went to visit her. And then one time I sent her, it was during Christmas time, I sent her out like a snowflake that I had cut. That was like a really big thing that was important to us, like just like little trinkets, because we're really big on gifts. We don't have to FaceTime or like call each other all the time. Just the fact that we take the time to write each other letters, just to think about each other. I don't know. It's like when we do pick up a phone and we do get to actually speak and talk about things that are going on, it's so much more important. And I think that I'll call Nikki when something really important happens. But when I write her a letter, it's just about my day. It's about something that happened in that very moment. And like Nikki is just the kind of person that you want to tell her how your day is going, because you know she cares about every small thing.
That was listener Jenna Pimentel, and I'm talking about friendship with Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman. I just love, love, love that clip from Jenna. And I think, Aminatou, I mean, it's so tender. And what it brings up for me is that they've really worked out a system that works for them. Like, they know that, you know, letter writing is a way to connect on this deeper level, and a phone call maybe a way to share updates. And I think that that communicating how you want to be communicated with in a friendship is not something we have a template for. And it feels like something that is really important. Do you think, Amina?
Oh, I think it's so, so important. You know, in romantic relationships, there is so much language around your, you know, like what your love language is or how you should communicate with someone. And I really wish that that were the case with friendship as well. I loved that clip so, so, so much, because it really just upends, you know, the script of how tender you're supposed to be with your friend. And I find that, you know, that intentionality and just that tenderness is so inspiring to me.
So there are things, you know, big things like moving across the country or physical distance that obviously make friendships challenging and reasons that you have to navigate. But you also look at race in your book and being in an interracial friendship and how you all have navigated that at various points along the line. And Anne, I'd love to start with you and just kind of getting your take on what it was like to write about that and what it was like to kind of read that in that book coming out in this very particular moment where we're having these big conversations about systemic racism and trying to really acknowledge how it shows up in our everyday lives.
Yeah, well, to be precise for this conversation, you know, I am white and Aminatou is black. And so we write about interracial friendship in the context of our black-white friendship in America. You know, not all interracial friendships share those exact details. So that's one sort of caveat. I will say that, you know, I for a long time really wanted it to be true that despite this difference in our races, that our friendship was somehow insulated from the issues of race and racism and anti-Black racism in particular that really permeate this country. That, like, we could talk about race in the news, or we could talk about racist things that Aminatou experienced, you know, at work or elsewhere in the world. But when it came to our friendship, we were somehow special and, like, sealed off from these dynamics. And over time, it has really become clear to me what a lie that is, and how that was really just something that I wanted to believe, not something that was true for her in every moment. And reflecting on the way race has played out in our friendship over time really allowed me to gain some concrete, specific details about how not true it is that our friendship is sealed off from race. And you know, the experience of writing it, and this is something that we acknowledge openly in the book, you know, is something that I think required different things of both of us, right? It required me to maybe say some things that I thought were, you know, kind of embarrassing, or admit to some things I maybe felt some shame about. But Aminatou's experience of plumbing these experiences is like, is much more painful, is a very different kind of difficult experience. And so in order to write about it, we kind of had to recognize that the learning moments that I get to have about race come at a great cost to her and come at a very painful cost. And also that lie that I had really internalized, that our friendship could somehow be safe or distinct from racism, is something that, you know, is just never going to be true. And it's very different from other kinds of stretches that way. You know, we can't just make a change in how we communicate and account for it. The wider world is always going to intervene when it comes to race, and is just, it's a very different kind of challenge that, you know, I think we are, and I certainly personally am still trying to get better at addressing, you know, not eliminating, because I wish that were possible, but I don't think it is, but really addressing in an ongoing way in our friendship.
Aminatou, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that also. And maybe you can talk about the concept of a trap door, because I think that that's something that might resonate with people in this moment in particular.
Yeah. In writing the book, we talked to the cultural critic Wesley Morris, who is who gave us this framework for the trap door, where essentially he is characterizing the real limitation that is ever present in any relationship between interracial people, and specifically like between Black and white people. And he likens the incident that like opens the trapdoor to, you know, it's almost like a drop of mustard just like falling on your pants, on your white pants. It's not the very dramatic, we're not talking about the plot of Get Out here, or, you know, like a very overt racist incident that we can all, you know, we can all agree on. But he talks about these moments in intimate relationships where you really have to decide, oh, like that feels weird. That was awkward. Do I say something about the mustard, or do I just move on and pretend that it's not there? And I think that that feeling is so recognizable for me, certainly. And I know for so many other people, you know, and it doesn't have to be, it doesn't even have to be the white friend that is the person who causes this incident. It could literally just be them, you know, like reacting to something that a friend of a friend has said, or reacting to, you know, a person of color saying that they feel uncomfortable about something. And I think, you know, within the bounds of intimate relationships, obviously we have so much more grace and so much more forgiveness at play. Because like Anne said, I think we really all want to believe that You know, our relationships are insulated from the rest of the world. And that is just not true. Because of racism, we just do not get to have nice things. So in this, you know, in this case, I think that it's something to be, it's something to really to parse out. And I know that for me, it has also been surprising, I think, when those moments have happened. I have often been surprised by my own reaction, because, you know, your instinct is obviously that you love your friend and you want, you know, like, you're not throwing them away and you want to do better. But I think that even for people who are adept at talking about social justice like us, there had to be a recognizing that talking about dynamics that happen in the world doesn't insulate us from having to talk about them as they happen in our relationship.
Right. And I mean, in terms of interracial relationships in particular, so much of our ability to have them comes with, you know, who do we have in our circle? Who do we have in our extended friend web? And someone tweeted at us, thinking about how our built environment discourages particular kinds of friendship. People in co-housing communities, for example, find it easier to interact regularly than people who live in apartment buildings or McMansions. Also looking at kind of racial segregation and the deep history of how our country is laid out and who that means that we are exposed to and how that shapes the kind of connections and relationships that we build. Lots of big questions. I don't have a ton of time left, but I would love to kind of close out with a quote that you all have toward the end of your book. You say, good friendships produce true knowledge about yourself. And I wonder what you each see more of in yourselves now because of the other. Maybe, Anne, you can start.
Oh, maybe I can start. I feel really emotional having you read that, because, you know, part of the answer is, you know, having been close to Aminatou for, you know, the bulk of my adult life now, it's really hard for me to pick apart, like, what is a result of our friendship and what isn't. I'm tempted to say everything, you know? I mean, the fact that I am a person who is fulfilled in my career and in my other friendships, I credit with her support in my professional life and her encouraging me to, like, be a person who grows deeper into myself. You know, just at the most fundamental level, the things that are most important to me, I have in part because of her support and encouragement.
Aminatou, what do you see more of in yourself because of Anne?
Oh my God, how much more time do you have? I mean, you know, I feel so similarly to what Anne said. I think that it's hard to think of the person that I am today and to think about the personal growth that I've experienced and really the hope that I have that I can be a good person and a whole person and a contributing member of my community. It's hard to think about all those things and not, you know, attribute them directly to this relationship that I have with Anne. And so I think that friendship, as we write in the book, it is truly the mirror in which we see ourselves. And, you know, and having someone else hold that mirror up for you is so powerful.
Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman are co-authors of the new book, Big Friendship, How We Keep Each Other Close, as well as co-hosts of the podcast, Call Your Girlfriend. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.